I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Well, today we are talking etiquette here on Conversations for Couples.
Ooh, I better be on my best behavior.
You missed the podcast.
Oh, the podcast.
Conversations for Couples. I said, and she says the podcast. And we're going to talk etiquette, the what's, the when's, the how's, the where's, and why. You know, and also we're going to talk about whether there is a place for etiquette in your relationship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever the case may be. And to help us learn a bit about etiquette and navigate some rules and tell us how it may impact our lives is Allison Cheperdak, who's the founder of Elevate Etiquette. Allison is a lawyer. Sorry for you. As am I, as everybody knows, a former TV journalist. She's spoken at Harvard Law School. I think I bought a candy once at Harvard Law School. That's as close as I got. And she's also spoken at Congress. She's been featured in Vogue magazine. She's been on Fox TV here in the District of Columbia. Allison, we're so happy to have you on. Thanks for coming aboard.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let's start sort of at the beginning. So you go to law school. And I know you worked, you did some federal work, you did some corporate work. What turns a lawyer into an etiquette, let's say, expert? Let's just go with that for the time being.
Well, it all started when my husband and I were engaged to be married. I was graduating from college and I had all this wedding etiquette that I didn't know the answer to. So I got my first wedding etiquette book thinking that I would just turn to the pages that I needed to answer the questions that I had, like how do I address this envelope or does my cousin get a plus one and all these kinds of questions that I had. And I found myself reading this first book cover to cover. And then I continued to just really have this interest in emotional intelligence and social interaction and just kindness, executive presence, all of these things. And so it was something that I was continuing to study just in a personal capacity as I was working as a television news reporter and anchor, and then as an attorney. And especially when I moved to Washington for law school and I started working in public policy and practicing law, I saw that these little things of social dynamics, they really matter. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to just start posting on social media about etiquette, and it really took off pretty quickly and eventually went all in and made it a business.
Interesting.
So cool. That's so cool. So I just wanted to share with you, my mom is from Boston and very proper. And also I remember growing up, she would say it is etiquette too. And then there was Miss Manners, I think, that she used to read. And so I kind of like in my head, I kind of think of it as like, oh, it's my mom telling me how to behave, right? The etiquette piece. So that was one thing I wanted to share with you. But I'm just curious if you can kind of talk about etiquette within the relationship, within couples. I know you talk about etiquette, you know, in all areas, but I specifically see couples, I'm a family therapist, that kind of etiquette goes out the window in relationships. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people, you know, fart, burp, interrupt. David and I interrupt a lot. So can you kind of zone in on a little bit of that piece, like what you think, how that plays out in relationships?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. And I think relationships can be especially tricky because we only have a finite amount of charmingness in us in a given day. And we might give it all to the people who are our friends or our colleagues or our acquaintances. Like, we're not going to flip out at the barista when we're getting our coffee, but our closest family and the people that we shouldn't, but we might take for granted, they might get what's left of us rather than the best of us at the end of the day. And so the people that we are in the most intimate relationships with, they see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And you want to be together through the good and the bad, but it's important not to take people for granted. And also to know that etiquette at its core, does it apply to a formal dinner scenario? Yes. Does it involve knowing what fork to use? Yes. But what's more important is how you treat people. And like the underpinning of it all is kindness, respect, and integrity. So as you're communicating or just going about your life in a intimate relationship, that should be your North Star for sure.
It's interesting, you know, we live in this time now where, you know, you see people out on a Saturday night having dinner in flip-flops and cut-off shorts or tank tops, whatever the case.
And their phones
are on and so forth. And how does that strike you in terms of, you know, your perspective from, you know, in looking at it from how people should treat each other? You said integrity, which is very interesting to me. How does that sort of play out to you when you're sitting someplace and you see that going on?
When I see that going on, you know, I think every relationship is different and it's hard to know what's going on just by observing. However, I think how you dress, it's about showing some self-respect, but it's also showing respect to the other person that you're with, because it shows that this matters and I put some intention into how I'm dressing for this event. And that doesn't mean that you need to wear a full suit to every occasion. You want to dress appropriately for whatever the occasion is, but it just shows that you care and that you're showing up for that person. And I think that can be very powerful.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. During the pandemic, Julie and I, you know, everybody was in, obviously, and it got to the point where we started to try to manufacture dates, right? And so we weren't going any place, but she might have made some, you know, charcuterie board, or have something to eat, or a couple drinks, whatever it might be, and she might have been working all day. And so we're getting ready to have our little date in the kitchen, and she comes in, and I said, "Oh no! You're not wearing your social worker suit. You got to go upstairs, take a shower, put something." We did. It was a joke, but it did make us feel more, even in that limited scenario, more like we were actually, you know, on a date and doing something special together.
I love that.
Yeah. What are some things that people should keep in mind in terms of, you know, etiquette, you know? And I love that you're talking about like the social, you know, the social IQ, the social EQ of relationships. What are things that you think are important for, you know, people that are in relationships, whether new or long-term? What do you think people should be thinking about?
Clarity in communication. I think often people think that being ambiguous is kind, but in actuality, when we state a preference or when we are clear, it is more kind. So saying things like "whatever you want" is often not as kind as like "I'd rather go to a French restaurant tonight" or "French or Italian" or something like that. Or just in general, it can be any form of communication. It's better to over communicate than to assume that the other person is understanding or reading your mind.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I really like that, the clear communication, and that it's maybe harder to say, to declare what you want or declare how you feel, right, about something. But in the end, it's kinder. It's more direct. So you're really talking about etiquette in communication, which is kind of an interesting piece.
Yes. And I would say another thing is I recommend praising in public and correcting or coaching or providing more constructive feedback in private. So that's a big one. So unless your partner is saying something that's like wildly ridiculous and you just can't let it stand in a public setting, like you're at a dinner party or something like that, in general, it's better to just let it slide rather than correcting in public.
And discuss it later when it's just the two of you. So tell me, let's say, you know, we're early in a relationship, you know, Julie and me, and you know, I'm talking to you to try to get some advice. I don't know anything, right? You know, I came in off the street someplace, and I've met this young woman, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to move the relationship along. What kind of advice do you give me in terms of how to act, how to dress, where to go, what to do, things like that?
I would say have lots of conversations. Don't assume that someone wants to do something, like say, "What would you like to do?" Or "I was thinking of doing something like this," and then provide a couple options, and then you can have a conversation about it. And I would say don't try to like write the whole book all at once. Mm-hmm. Just take it one step at a time. So go on that first date and see how it goes. And if you enjoy that activity, maybe you do it again or do something similar to that. And don't feel like you need to share everything about your life all at once. It's something that builds over time. And that's one of the beautiful things about a relationship. So I would try to take the pressure off to make this like the perfect experience and just take it one moment or one day at a time.
Yeah.
Holding a door, yes or no?
I say yes. However, it's a personal preference. Some people that are not in like a heteronormative relationship may not love it. But in general, I say holding a door is a way to show respect regardless of gender. So it's something that you can do for your partner. It's something that you can do for a colleague. You can do for a friend. So it is a way of showing respect.
Yeah. I had a question about what you do when you mess up. Because, you know, there's times that people do things, you know, incorrectly, you know, with
not kind of messing up. What are you talking about?
Well, just, you know, like if you said something to somebody that was hurtful or, you know, I'm going back to burping and farting or whatever. But I mean, I think those things are more surface. But like if you did something, you know, to somebody that hurt them, how do you, in sort of the etiquette mindset that you work in, how do you, you recommend that people remedy that?
So I would say remedy it in the medium that you think they would be most receptive to receiving your message in. So if it's a close relationship, it might be face-to-face or it might be time is of the essence and you need to address it immediately, even if you can't do it face-to-face, maybe you do it over the phone or something like that. And I would say this is not the moment to say, I'm sorry that I made you feel this way. It's, you know, I made a mistake and explain what happened. And then also explain how you're going to see to it that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, because David and I have this, we've gotten into this scenario where I'll, you know, do something that maybe was disrespectful and then I'll say, well, I'm sorry. And he's like, well, you said you were sorry last time, but you did it again. So don't say you're sorry anymore. And then I'll be like, well, I guess I can't apologize for things. And we've gotten into that scenario.
That can be difficult. I would say you can always apologize. There's always like every day starts anew and you want to remember that you're on the same team here. So I think always coming back to that is really powerful and actions speak louder than words. So apologize, commit to whatever it is you're going to do to rectify the situation and then actually do it. And the other person should create a space that's supportive of that positive transition.
So we're jumping all over the place. Okay. And that's how we do things here. So let me ask you about this.
Sure.
You know, we're going out on a date someplace, wherever it may be. And I'm dressed nice. I dress the way I like to dress, and I'm perfect. I mean, I'm not sloppy, but I'm not dressed the way that the environment suggests that people should dress. Mm. And that does happen to me with regularity. In fact, it happened last night to some degree. Do you tell people that they should modify what they wear, dependent upon the circumstances, even though they may look quite fine in the clothing that they have on?
I do. So okay. I think that different scenarios call for different dress codes and that it's appropriate to, so long as there is a dress code or an expectation, I recommend conforming to that because it's a way that you show respect for the host or the occasion.
Okay. So when, you know, sort of at an event that they say black tie optional, then you should go in a suit and tie or wear a tuxedo. You shouldn't show up in a shirt and you know, slacks, I guess, if you're a male or
exactly.
I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah, I'm laughing because we just got invited to our niece's wedding and it's black tie optional. And David's like, oh, I don't want to wear a fancy, you know.
I don't like weddings anyway. Yeah. It's just not for me.
Yeah. So he's sort of in his head. He's sort of like trying to figure out what can he get away with. He certainly can't wear jeans, but he's sort of like, okay, well, what's the optional piece? So what would you recommend in a black tie optional? Just because we're in it right now.
I would say a tuxedo or a dark suit and a dark tie. so that either of those would fit the black tie or the black tie optional. In my experience, most often when you see a black tie optional dress code on the invitation, the host or the couple really wishes that people would dress in black tie, but they offer that optionality to make people feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case, but I think it often is. And in some ways, I like a black tie, or I like a clear cut dress code, because then there's more of this expectation, like, are you going to be the only one that doesn't wear a tux? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to be the only one who does wear a tux? So there can be some ambiguity there. And it's very regional. Like in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. you would likely see more people going for the more formal option, given the option. Mm-hmm. But in other places of the country or around the world, that may not be the case. But that's why we go about it.
But isn't that – so let's look at that from the other side of the fence for a second. Can't you also interpret that as being disrespectful to the people that you want to have at the event? I mean, a lot of people don't have tuxedos. So that require, you know, if it's a black tie event, I get invited, we want to go. I got to go out and spend $1,000 on a tuxedo
or rent
something mm-hmm. that never looks good, because mm-hmm. rentals never look right. So, you know, what do you say about that to the folks who are planning the event?
Sure. I think that the dress code should always be commensurate with the experience that the hosts are putting together. So if the host is putting together a casual buffet meal, it would not be appropriate to be asking the guests to dress in a super formal way. But if they are putting together an event with a lovely plated dinner and a nice band mm-hmm. and a really sophisticated ambiance, then the attire would be fitting for the experience mm-hmm. and everything about the occasion, from the invitation to the beautiful calligraphy, it's all in harmony with that kind of elevated mm-hmm. experience. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, there's things you could say, good and bad, about asking for a more formal dress code and not. But going back to when the tradition of wearing a tuxedo started, it was all about allowing ladies to really shine, because men would be in all black. So that means that women would really stand out in whatever color they chose to wear. And then it was also considered an equalizer, because men were essentially wearing a uniform, all wearing the exact same thing. So it wasn't about showing off and all these kinds of things. And I think it really depends. Like, if you're someone who goes to a lot of events that are black tie optional or black tie, then you may not be spending that much money on your clothes, because you're wearing the same thing over mm-hmm. and over again. Mm-hmm. So I think it can go either way, but I can understand how some people may not be super excited to receive an invitation in the mail and think, I need to buy something now.
Right. But times have changed, right? I mean, so now men's tuxedos aren't just black anymore. You see men in navy. You see men in some cases, white. Lighter colors, white. Mm-hmm. So that has changed mm-hmm. a bit in the 200 plus years that there's been black tie in this country. I guess that takes us back to post-colonialism or thereabouts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, going back to the relationship piece. Mm-hmm. So either in your own relationship or relationships of people that you know, if you're with a partner and you, you know, don't like some of the way they behave, right? And you mentioned,
you're asking for a friend?
Asking for a friend. So you mentioned sort of like correct in, you know, in private and, you know, what was the first part that you
praise in public.
And so can you give us some more advice around that? So like we're out, we're with some friends or at a party or something like that. And, you know, and your partner is acting a certain way mm-hmm. and you're not comfortable with it. You don't think it's appropriate or you don't like it. What are some suggestions to do?
So I would approach it privately in a non-confrontational way. You're on their team, and maybe they're talking about politics at a party, and you might agree with them 100% on all their political views, but don't think that this dinner party or this cocktail party is the right moment to be sharing their political opinions. You could say that afterwards. You could say, I love, I think your jokes about politics are hilarious, and they're perfect fit for mm-hmm. our living room. But when we go to the neighbors, let's try to focus on other topics, because they also may not be aware that other people don't necessarily agree with them. They could be joking about things and people are just kind of politely or awkwardly laughing there. So that's how I might handle something like that. And I would say regarding etiquette things like how to hold a wine glass or like what fork to use or what to do with your napkin, I generally don't like to correct people unless they ask for help. And with someone that you're in a close relationship with, you are an advocate for each other. So it's a little bit different. But I would make sure to approach it in a way like, you know, there's, I just noticed a couple things that, you know, you could do or we could incorporate to be more polished and come across more respectful. Or if you sense that there's any kind of anxiety, like some people, they're afraid to go on a client dinner or they're not, they don't want to go to a certain kind of restaurant or they don't know how to pronounce something. So they won't order it or it, they're distracted from like the real meaning of these moments and meals. So if you ever sense that that's holding someone back, you could help them in a private capacity, but you want to make sure that they're really open to it, because unless we're talking about like someone who works for you or works under you or a child where it's this relationship where it's like a parent-child relationship where you're teaching them, you want to be really respectful of ensuring that an adult is receptive to the feedback, because if they're not, it may not come off so well.
Yeah. And talk to us about like with kids, people that are raising children, how important do you think it is to be working on etiquette kind of from the beginning?
I think it's extremely important. And I would say the number one thing you can do is set a good example. So, and it's, it can start really young with just in a safe scenario, teaching people how to look adults in the eye or look others in the eye and have a conversation or shaking hands, you know, saying their full name or how old they are, those kinds of things, making sure they say please and thank you, taking turns. I also love, there's, you know, some of my favorite memories as a kid were at a kids table, but I also love when you don't have a kids table and you mix up different generations, because I think it creates a really nice dynamic relationship and it encourages kids to rise to the level of the adult's manners. And it also can make it seem more cool to eat the food that they might otherwise turn their nose up at if they were seated somewhere else. So there's a lot of benefits there.
Yeah, I always liked when our kids were younger and we would have events at our house, Thanksgiving or whatever, we always had the kids sitting together. And I thought it was, I thought it was lovely. I mean, as a parent.
I mean, within us, not a kid's table.
Not a kid's table, but everybody together at one big, in that case, it was a table that almost went out to the street because it was so big. But I never liked the concept of a kid's table because it felt like you were segregating them, that you were, that they weren't really part of the event. And so I'm glad that you support my no kids table proposition that I've been pushing for a long time. Because we went to other family, you know, other family members' places and they always said, oh, the kids are going to sit over there. I'm like, well, then I'm going to go sit with them because I think that's great.
It encourages better behavior and they feel like they're being treated more like an equal, more like an adult, more like they belong. And it can be great. It's all, it's a very American thing to have a kid's table and also to have a kid's menu or special food for kids too.
Yeah. I know we have to sort of start to wrap it up, but I have one question that, that is sort of burning since I have an expert in etiquette here. And, so I have a lot of clients that have sort of, this reaction to nervousness with laughing. Okay. So I've actually had a situation where he was out. I thought he got electrocuted and I just started laughing. And it, I mean, it, it was like a nervous laughter kind of thing.
All the hair on my arm fell off, by the way. So,
it's not uncommon that people, when they're uncomfortable, just have this reaction. So if you are one of us that may laugh inappropriately, what do you suggest to do about that?
So I would say in a relationship, probably your significant other knows this, but if not, let them know. So like, no, this is no reflection of me finding it funny that you're in a lot of pain or I have this this habit of laughing in moments where it may not seem appropriate, and I don't want you to be offended by it, but it's a hard thing for me to control. And so you have that conversation to begin with. And then in the moment when it happens, I would apologize and just handle it that way. And in some sense, I think if it's something that your partner knows that you do, but there's no malice behind it, they likely, I would think, would take it pretty well and just see it as something about you. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, in the moment, not particularly well, but afterwards, yeah, afterwards, yes. So let me ask you this question. If folks want to learn more about, you know, maybe, I don't want to say how to act or what to do, but how to make themselves better. And that's really what you're talking about in a lot of ways, is making yourself a better me. What should they look at or read? And B, should they reach out to you? And if so, how do they find out more about your recommendations, your advice, and so forth?
Well, thank you for that question. You can find me on my website, which is elevateetiquette.com. And then I'm on all the social media places also at Elevate Etiquette. And I share daily tips on life, work, and love that incorporate modern manners and how to elevate yourself in a really affirming, no mean girl energy kind of way. And I work with clients on a one-on-one basis, and I do group coaching both in person and online. So
nice.
Awesome.
Catch me that way.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we want to thank you so much for being on. This has been a lot of fun and very different. We've been doing this podcast now for, I guess, about 18 months, give or take. And I always like to bring new information to our growing audience. And you have certainly done that. And Allison, we so much appreciate you being here. Folks, be sure to join us next time on Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
Julie Bullitt is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullitt is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.